Welcome to Open Comments with myself, Ash.
And me, Oliver.
Where we'll discuss things openly with our guests from a variety of backgrounds and from different walks of life. Through this podcast, we hope to give you an inside look into a variety of topics with an equal mix of humour and candour. In this series, we'll touch on some of the following topics: healthcare, HR, diversity, access to technology, and lots more. We hope you enjoy our show and look forward to bringing more topics into the fold. Let's get started.
Okay, so thank you for joining us. And Paul, thank you very much for agreeing to do a podcast with us. I'm just going to introduce you a little bit. So Paul Homan is a distinguished engineer at IBM, and from my experience has done a lot of events for the Open Group. You've spoken at a lot of our events. You've also provided us with a EA minute at the start of all of our Toolkit Tuesday episodes. So, and I know we have one later today, so I look forward to hearing that too. But Paul, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
So, thank you for inviting me on. So as you said, I'm a distinguished engineer inside IBM. My day job is as a CTO for within our consulting division for industrial clients. So pretty much anywhere you find engineering and manufacturing. That keeps me fairly busy.
And so I know this a little bit more, but we'll dive into it. But how did you get to where you are at IBM? Obviously, we know that you probably didn't start there as a CTO.
So I used to work for the Royal Mail. I started work originally in an aerospace company many moons ago, so there is a link back to my engineering roots. But I used to work at Royal Mail, the UK post office, and I was their chief enterprise architect for quite a few years. And during that period as well is where I first engaged with the Open Group. So that's 25 years ago, last month now. After I'd done that, I basically got approached by IBM to come and be part of their advisory practice to come and kind of help others with enterprise architecture. So I joined the services division and did enterprise architecture with IBM about 16 years ago now. When I first started that, it was very much my take on it was they asked me to come in and help everybody who were their clients not make the same mistakes I'd been making for the previous 6 years and sort of learn lessons from it and try and help them along on their journeys.
Okay, great. Thank you. And did you always want to be an enterprise architect, or is it something that you kind of fell into almost?
So enterprise architecture itself, I wouldn't say I always did, because I don't think it was really around when I started, to be quite honest. Not certainly something that I was conscious of. And I have to say, I didn't really intend to get into IT either. I obviously joined the wrong queue at the careers fair or something. But I started work, as I say, with in an IT department. We called it management services back then, for Lucas Aerospace. And they just recruited me as a programmer. And I did that for a little while. I had the opportunity whilst I was there to go and study business management systems. And one of the things that people were talking about was technology strategy and the whole need for that kind of strategic planning. And the topic enterprise architecture was kind of muted at the time. And I just found it really interesting as a way of kind of, actually, what is this? You know, how do we set out a strategy and then how do we deliver it? And then the more I got to learn about systems, as I got involved in more and more of them, it just to me made so much more sense that, yes, you could have people like me as a programmer writing a system in one place, but I was writing lots and lots of little silos and it didn't add up. And that kind of went, you need to have a plan, and you know, you need to execute the plan, and the way to be able to do that is enterprise architecture. So it kind of sort of started to fall into place from there, really, to be honest, as making sense. But I didn't get the opportunity until the late 90s at the Royal Mail post office, where we had lots of setting up of the businesses, and basically they introduced a new enterprise architecture function and had to find somebody who had at least heard of the term. And I think they kind of tapped me on the shoulder and went, I think we've heard you mention that term. Why don't you go and have a go at this? So I got a brand new function and a brand new setup. So it's cool.
Nice. And can you tell us what excites you the most about what you do?
There's going to be lots of things. It depends how I cut it up, really, to be honest. In terms of what I do today, I know, and part of the reason that I've gone back into working in industrial is I still have a sweet spot for that kind of engineering and manufacturing kind of place, and that kind of mentality of doing stuff. And the reason why is I genuinely believe that engineers solve the world's problems. And so actually, you know, what I find really exciting and interesting is working with organizations that are genuinely trying to tackle new difficult problems, right? And that really, from a technology point of view, what we're trying to do is take as much friction out of the system as possible so that those engineering problems can be addressed. And that's the exciting part, is doing that. When you said it, my mind went off in many different directions. Because the other part, if I'm going to cheat and throw in a second area, is actually seeing people today come through who you can see a light bulb go on. They may be early in a career or something, and they kind of go, ah, I now get why you've been talking about that stuff, right? And to see people's gaze lift to the point where they recognize the value of being able to do stuff in a joined up, more interoperable way, that's really, really exciting. I like to see that.
And so you mentioned people that have maybe just getting into the field, or maybe they've just left university or college or what have you. Do you have any particular maybe advice for them, or are there any common struggles for people to get into that area? Is there anything you can provide, you know, for us now on any of those issues?
Yeah, I mean, when I started, I mean, I'll relate a story. When I first started work, I started alongside a whole bunch of engineers who worked for, literally worked on the shop floor or in the drawing office. And I was in the management services office, which was kind of as equivalent to the basement, if you like, in those days of where I was. You know, we all started on the same day, quite a long time ago now. And their chief engineer came out to them and went, right, you know, I'm going to set up a program of work for you. You're going to have coaching, mentoring, career assignments. You're going to fill in logbooks, have assessments. You know, you're going to have feedback, and et cetera, et cetera. And by the time you've spent a couple of years doing all of that, collating all of that information, knowledge, you know, support, you'll become a chartered engineer. Meanwhile, in a sort of just on the other side of the site, there was me. I had the head of IT. I remember thinking, wow, you know, what world have I joined in IT, right? It's kind of like, I'm envious of the structure, the career progression, the models, what's going on over in the engineering world. As opposed to what I was doing. So I deliberately went after trying to become a professional. And so that story, a bit of a long way of putting it, but I still think one of the key things to do is not to set it out maybe as rigidly as the engineers did then, because that's just not the modern world, but to have that professional kind of plan. How do I want to be a professional in this world, and what does that mean? How do I get that thumbprint that says, yes, this is a professional person. They've built their career. And how do I map that journey out so that I feel I'm in charge of it and I'm in front of it? And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges, is actually to, for people starting, is to have some idea of how they want to navigate that. Not a fixed route or a fixed kind of answer, but actually, what are the things that I want to collect along the way that makes me feel like I'm fulfilling some kind of destiny rather than relying on others to inform it?
And speaking on your journey, can you tell us a little bit about what lifelong learning means to you?
Yeah, of course, it's absolutely. So one of the things that we certainly look for is a little term when we recruit people in, a little term called technical curiosity. And it's a lovely little term because it kind of means you haven't got to be technically, you know, brilliant, but you've got to be interested, right? And you've got to be curious enough to go and find out and to explore. And I think that term actually sets you up, because once you have, if you have that natural curiosity about things, then you should be a lifelong learner, right? If you're the sort of person that finds interest in parallel fields and other things, how you bring those in should continue. I regularly explain, or kind of teach people around things like, you know, architecture and whatever else. And I genuinely, there is a learning experience from what you get asked, right? From that point of view. The other side of it is, for me, lifelong learning in terms of what I've been doing, apart from finding out about, you know, industry and what, you know, various companies are doing outside of IT, just trying to understand other fields. I did a lot of work looking into biological ecosystems, just to try and understand how that might work in the world of business ecosystems. And actually there's carryovers and things that, you know, don't translate, and I don't want to force them in, but there's so many areas you can kind of draw inspiration and thinking from that that curiosity should keep feeding that learning forever, to be honest.
Is there anything in particular outside of work, outside of your professional life and career, is there anything that you've been trying to teach yourself recently, or maybe in the last few years? Have you tried to take on anything new or enhance your knowledge in something you already know?
I tried to work out how to pull a better pint during the pandemic when I put my own pub in the back garden. That was a learning curve. I learned a lot about beer I didn't know. I thought I was quite knowledgeable about it. But in seriousness, in terms of knowledge and learning, yes, there are things in the technology world, as you might expect, you know, you're always trying to keep on top of the latest terms, the latest sort of areas of exploration, of course. Everything from, including things like, for example, it's always fascinating to find out about what people are saying about things like quantum, for example. But actually, the stuff that I've been most interested in most recently has been a few other kind of historical events. So I, in the last couple of years, I found myself reading up on an awful lot of history, actually, just to sort of understand how things have happened and why they've, you know, and what's happened. It was partly for me because I feel that in the field of IT, we're quite disrespectful of our own history. We like to kind of junk it a bit quick. And in fact, there's a lot of lessons that we can already learn from our own field, let alone others, about history. So yeah, probably just a little bit more kind of historical stuff most recently.
That's okay. I always think we can learn from our past or things that have already happened and apply it to current or future life in various different aspects of the world.
Nice. Now, moving things along, so we've heard that you're start again. Moving things along, we've heard that you believe strongly in diversity and access to technology. So please, can you discuss ways in which you're so passionate about access to technology, but also the importance of diversity, whether that be in a workplace or even, you know, in your day-to-day ways of working, like what that means to you?
Yeah, totally. So one of the things I found out, well, I had confirmed through being an architect, is you kind of have a bit of a permission to be gently pedantic. In fact, gently is probably the wrong word for it at times, right? So very precise about certain things. And in particular, we get very caught up with, language. But if I pick diversity and inclusion up as a term, which is obviously, you often hear together, one of the things I found really interesting is that I could almost say that a lot of diversity kind of measures the diversity of a group, or, you know, that kind of setup. Whereas if I think about inclusion, what I'm doing is actually trying to work out how do we bring in and make sure people aren't excluded from things, right? So inclusivity is really, really important. And inclusivity doesn't just mean opening something up, right? I mean, you know, I barely need to tell the open group about opening stuff up, but it isn't just making it open. There can be many barriers to people being able to access stuff, being able to engage with things that are because something isn't in totally inclusive. So I think there's a lot that can be done from an inclusivity point of view to ensure people don't, opt out themselves. They're not excluded for other reasons, but also ranging from a technology point of view, how things are presented, how things are shared. So there are some, actual barriers to the way that we represent things, all the way to the way that we to the way we work and the way that things are perceived. So if you focus on inclusivity and ensuring that as a wider and as many people are included in what you're doing, to me, diversity follows. You should improve diversity as a result of bettering inclusivity, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you would either hope to implement yourself or maybe just see perhaps before the end of your career in terms of inclusivity? Anything that you would, I don't know, how should I say this? Is there a way you have in mind of allowing more people to be included rather than having them still excluded?
I think the ultimate goal for me, and I think it's a difficult one to put something very precise on as an action today, but it's something I think that dialogue should extend. And you do see some good efforts, but I think the ultimate goal for me is a lot of people will exclude themselves from a particular endeavour because they're not sure that they are worthy or able to contribute the respect, from a respecting point of view, either themselves or others or whatever else. And sometimes that is a mental barrier rather than an actual one. But, why people would not be respective of all of those opinions, how we can bring together so many, diverse opinions, if you like, into and make it inclusive into a way that works, is one of the reasons that, I honestly, and it just sounds a little bit kind of, convenient, but one of the reasons that I'm still involved with the Open Group after 25 years is I think it's made a pretty good job of ensuring that there's a diversity of thinking and a diversity of behavior, that is included in its working and all the way through. Everyone can always do better, of course, but I think that's the setup. Whereas I think more generally, we tend to put up barriers and conditions and assumptions within organizations that mean that we kind of, you know, we tune into the people that think the same way. And I think having ways that give us the ability to stop and bring in people that think in a different way, for various different reasons, either because of the experiences they've had, the cultures they come from, the physical, you know, situation they find themselves in, whatever it may be, and being able to be part of that dialogue, I think is the big part. So, you know, it's not a very prescriptive action, because I think it's not one that one person can just decide, do this action and it will solve it. I think there's a lot that needs to be done on a consensual mutual basis. So
there are things that organizations can do, but also for the individual, there are obviously some barriers within for maybe some people wanting to get involved in certain areas of IT, and to that I guess we can just encourage them to either take the jump. It might not matter if you're either a thought leader or an expert, but if you are thinking differently, then that's something that we can always encourage. Don't always stick to the norm, because the norm might not always be 100% right.
And it's understanding some of those barriers as well, because those barriers don't, you know, why, even if they're only perceived, why are they perceived? It's not about the jumping in thing. I think is it makes sense, but I think, you know, on top of that, actually, sometimes the barriers, you don't even know they're there, right?
So yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And would you also say as well, going back to lifelong learning, really focusing on the fact of brushing up on one's skill set, honing in on those skills, and learning at their own pace? Because I really feel that people have their own learning paths, but obviously everyone learns in a different way. So there's not like, the shoe can't, one size doesn't fit all, in terms of, you know, everyone has a different approach. So for those that maybe lack that confidence or are unsure about how to coach themselves or where to go, do you have any advice or even schemes or, you know, sites that you've looked into yourself that have helped you? Sorry, I've realized that's quite a big question saying it back, but are there any like resources that you find that have really helped you along the way, you know, in your particular journey?
So I've tended to rely on one thing above all others, and I'll come back to that. I read bits and stuff, and you know, lots of different areas and online and actual books and whatever else. And rely on bit shared stories, if you like. I think for me, the challenge isn't so much that, you know, where do you access stuff, because there's a lot of stuff, right? And nor do I have something that says just go here and you'll find an amazing font of knowledge. What I tend to find for me is I like to spend a bit of time ruminating over something. I like to get a seed for something. I mean, typically it might come because, you know, I've been asked about a pirate ship or something, and then that will sit there in the back of my head going round and round, and I will then go and do something. I like to cycle, I like to walk, I like to be outside, and those are the moments I find that topic will just sort of bounce around a little bit. And once I've kind of something, you know, a little thought has occurred to me, I will go and discuss it with someone. I'm actually, my greatest learnings, I would say, in the last, at least the last decade, haven't come from formal structured learning type setups at all. They've come from small conversations, often one-to-one, with people that I respect and trust. And we've had a little bit of a chin wag. We've had a discussion about something, and we've bounced something around with no real formal objective So if you like, I could set up a call with somebody and we'll spend half an hour chatting about something. And it may go down a complete tangent, or it may go very much on the thing that was, you know, the pirate ship analogy in the first place. It doesn't matter. The point is testing out my thinking, testing out some, asking some questions, getting somebody to sort of feedback on that, and that kind of shared sort of storying, if you like, to me has developed my thinking, my perspective, by listening, really listening to what they're saying and trying to build on it, try to build the idea. And quite a lot of the stuff over the last few years has come entirely from just having those one-to-ones or little groups of three where we've kind of kicked stuff around and deliberately permissioned ourselves to think without having to build, right? So not like, here's a problem, how do we solve this problem before we get off the call? What's the action point? You know, has anyone minuted it? None of that. Pure, let's just discuss, let's throw a ball in the middle of the room and kick it around a little bit, so it's not kind of completely without any topic, but let's discuss it and then see where it goes and allow ourselves that room, because you can't come up with something that's, you know, thought leadership material if you don't allow yourself to think.
Has there been a particularly influential person within your career? I won't get you to name names if you don't want to, but is there anyone that you've either looked up to or had mentoring advice from, or have you kind of just stuck it to yourself?
Oh no, all the way through. I mean, I'd never really thought about it at the very beginning of my career that I was doing it, but I you know, without making it a formal thing, I quotes from people stuck in my head. I don't know how or why, but they just kind of stuck in my head as to what they'd said when they'd said something quite, you know, pertinent at a relevant point. It stayed with me, you know, and I've kind of picked those up as I've gone along, and some of them have stayed with me, and I'll be quite honest, some of them have stayed with me because they're really good, and some of them stay with me because they're really bad, right? And I've kind of got these little quotes in my head, and I can remember who said them, and I won't name the name, certainly not the bad ones. I don't have them like a compendium and remember them every day, but they do seem to sort of keep coming back to me every so often. I realized after a while what I was doing was going, there's a person, right, who may be a peer, maybe, you know, somebody in my team, maybe, a line manager, or it could have been a head of department, or somebody I met, you know, it doesn't matter. And what I've done is I've kind of tried to almost adopt the thing I liked that they said as a kind of, you know, the way they behaved, what they did. It's not just what they said, it's what the intent behind it, what they were doing. And then, but at the same time, try and not replicate the things I didn't like. So if you like, take the best bits from all those people around me that I liked, and all the worst bits that I didn't like, kind of make sure weren't part of me. And that sounds quite formulaic, and it wasn't that formulaic. It was only upon reflection that I realized I was kind of doing that. But I think that's the point. You need mentors, you need coaches, but sometimes it's not a formal coaching relationship, it's quite casual. And to kind of give you a quote, it was my first head of department was called Brian. He basically told me, him and the person I was working for, we were having an argument about how I should write a report. And kind of went, I know, this person would be able to write a much better version of the report you've written, Paul, because they've been here for much longer, but I'm not trying to clone them. This has to be your report. So you write it. And I just thought, wow, that's great. It's fantastic. Because he's made me feel good, but he's made the other person feel good, right? And that it kind of went, well, they know what they're doing. So I was more open to listening to how to improve what I was doing because I still owned it. And I still remember that quote. Now that quote, that quote is 35 years old, right? So to remember it that long, clearly, you know, it sticks in there. Now that wasn't a formal mentoring relationship. It was a moment from a situation. And I, you know, I think that's important when you're going forward, is to try and pick the bits you like, reject the bits you don't.
Yeah, and over a lifetime, there are numerous little quotes here and there from a whole variety of people that we take on board. Other people may not, but it means something to us, doesn't it? So that's why we remember it. And in your case, for 35 years.
Well, yeah, and you know, beyond that, and not only from people I've met. I mean, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? So,
thank you, Paul. It's really been great. Not only learning more about you, but you know, your interest in diversity, access to technology, but also the importance of, you know, as you say, lifelong learning, and also accessibility in terms of where people are getting information, how they are learning, and how things are accessible to them, in the point of, you know, where they are in their journey, but also who they talk to, who their mentors are. And I really think that whole idea of coaching and listening is so important, especially, you know, in everyone's day to day, and just as we all, you know, grow in our respective careers, whatever journey we're on, I think that's certainly really important. So thank you for, you know, sharing that with us today. And we'd also like to say, you know, it was really nice to expand on, as I said before, that topic of diversity, access to technology. Now, for those that would like to keep up to date with you, I'm sure there's many out there who found this very riveting as much as we did. Are there any links that they can follow you on, social feeds, or where can they reach you?
Yeah, of course. So I think from a social point of view, the minute EA videos that I do, which would, you know, 1 minute videos of me kind of giving an opinion on something to do with enterprise architecture, trying to fit it all in into 1 minute, which you may have seen at the beginning of Toolkit Tuesdays. I publish those to I have a YouTube channel, and I publish them to LinkedIn, so they're all under the hashtag of all under my LinkedIn profile. So I have an unusual name, so it's quite easy to find me. I also use that hashtag MinuteEA. That's the main avenue that most stuff that I put out there, if anybody's interested. So yeah.
Thank you. That's great. And we'd also like to extend a thank you to all our listeners who have been keeping up to date with each episode so far and following us on this journey, where we've been interviewing a variety of individuals, such as yourself, from various walks of life, who have been really bringing their expertise and offering some great advice and anecdotes along the way. You know, we've really enjoyed, you know, all of our guests just giving us that time and opening up to us, and for not only us to learn more about them, but also our listeners. We're very grateful for that opportunity, and you know, we thank you again for letting us interview in this space. So thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. A pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, and I hope to see you again very soon.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thank you so much.